This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Manchester City were left picking up the pieces after Wednesday's bruising exit from the Champions League final, but their hopes of a somewhat unexpected double remain intact after Silva's salvation saw a late goal win the tie, and their opponents for the FA Cup final we know all too well. Who's afraid of little old City? You should be. It's Monday, April 22nd. I'm your host, Ollie McCool.
I'm Alex Michel.
I'm Bailey Wynn.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
Comes here for good to win! It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Now they have their triple crown.
So, welcome to Monday. Welcome to the review show. How's your weekend been, guys? Anything nice apart from City getting back on track after the FA Cup semi-final? Alex?
Now a little shout out to City Women's real quick. Another 5-0 win on our way to hopefully the title. A great performance all around. Just want to say that. And yeah, no, aside from that, we'll get into this result, obviously, the Chelsea result, and then the United result as well. But no, excited to start this week sort of fresh after everything that's happened over the past week or so. And yeah, onwards and upwards from here.
Yeah, it's always great to see City women balling out. And I mean, you put it on Twitter about Jess Park. What a phenomenal season she's having. I haven't watched as many of the games as I would like to. Just every time I watch you, just it seems like she's just the main attraction every time. It's fantastic. Bailey, how about you? How's your weekend been, mate?
Yeah, no, it's been good. Just catching up around the grounds, different kind of Barkley results. Seeing United crumble, as we'll get into later on, and checking out Eze, putting in pretty good performance at the weekend as well.
Yeah, Crystal Palace, what a phenomenal result for them, especially after beating Liverpool at Anfield. Good to turn it around with another win. But anyway, obviously after the second semi-final, we've ended up with a little bit more to discuss this episode and later this week as well. But for this half of this episode, we'll keep the focus on City versus Chelsea. I'm here with two kind of Twitter tactical titans almost, and we'll delve into that absolutely. But starting with the lineup, starting with the team selection, how shocked were you, Alex? You know, only four changes from Wednesday night, 120 minutes and penalties. Some of these players, you know, multiple starts in the last few weeks. I guess it was a bit of the tortured medical department with such a short turnaround. But what was your kind of initial reaction to that starting 11?
Yeah, I was definitely a bit shocked. I think when I saw the lineup graphic pop up on my Twitter feed, it didn't really hit me for a second because you see pretty much all the typical names. Obviously, we knew the fitness issue with Haaland. You saw the typical names, and in my mind, it was just like, okay, here we go. Here's another game. And then it took me a few minutes to be like, wait, hold on. Like, everyone was expecting mass rotation here. What's going on? And I think it's a mixture of kept learning lessons from the past in terms of there have been a few games in the past where he has rotated heavily and City have been, you know, worse off for it when it comes to the performance. But at the same time, you know, I mean, they were complaining in their post-game pressers, obviously, about the turnaround and having to play the Saturday kickoff rather than the Sunday kickoff. It was strange to not see Pep rotate as much as we all expected, it seemed. And I think in hindsight, I still would have liked to see one or two more names been benched. And, you know, there's nothing you can change now. But I think the most interesting aspect for me is not necessarily the ramifications for this performance in particular, but, okay, how does this impact selection on Thursday for Brighton? So that's really what I'm looking out for, and how much Pep is going to rotate for that match, which obviously is incredibly crucial in the title run-in.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really fair point. And we'll come on to Pep's comments after the game later, because, you know, there's a whole kind of whole amount to that, especially with some of the news we've come out this week. But Bailey, talking about some of the points that Alex made there, obviously we've seen Pep in previous FA Cup semi-finals rotate quite heavily and lost. You know, it's quite amazing that we've made the semi-finals all but 1 year of Guardiola's reign here, and we've only managed to, you know, win two FA Cups so far. I mean, you could talk about that being greedy, but, you know, I'm thinking of 3-0 down half-time against Liverpool a couple of years ago after a Champions League quarter-final. Were you expecting the likes of, you know, Nunes, Oscar Bob, Rico Lewis to start here? And with how the game started, what was kind of your reaction, you know, especially with some of the performances that we saw early in this game? What did you make of it?
I think he was going to go strong, because you've got a lengthy amount of time between this game and Brighton, so it's kind of like that block has finished. But I think there's a few names, like you mentioned, possibly Bob, possibly Doku on the wing. If we're looking at Grealish and Bernardo, maybe could come in. And I think I was probably expecting just an extra change from what we saw in that lineup, whereas Rodri made sense because he was going to want to go strong. And then I think you've got a way up. Is a fresh Nunes as good as a tired Rodri? I guess that's what he's kind of debating on the quali. And then if you go back to the previous results as well, with it being the 1-1 and a 4-4, that's got to bear in his mind, knowing that Chelsea pretty much did the same game plan in both of those games. It was always going to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think, you know, one, I was quite happy with it, because I said right from the off after Wednesday night, I wanted to see, you know, a reaction. I wanted to see City go out there and put it right. And I think, you know, some of the things we've heard, the players were kind of very clear and wanting to put it right themselves. You know, either that or show off all their haircuts after a trip to the barbers, which they all seem to have. But I think the changes Pep made were sensible. You know, it was quite obvious. Haaland, we had a little injury with, and Alvarez had to come in. Stones and Ake, I think they've kind of been waiting for the right game, and this seemed like an opportunity. But, you know, considering I argued right from Wednesday night that Pep needed to go strong, I won't complain, even if it has, you know, Rodri looking absolutely shattered, like he's just fresh out the slammer. I just think it was the right decision, and I'm just very glad that it paid off in the end. But moving on to more of the performance now, I saw a tweet after the game, we probably all saw it, from Nabil, who runs City Report, saying that we should have won on Wednesday, should have lost today, that's football. But you look at the general stats from this game, just the headline, you know, possession battle, 38% for Chelsea, 62% for us, 90% pass accuracy, more shots than them, albeit less on target. But it seemed, you know, the game just felt off for City for a while, Alex. And, you know, it took a while for them to almost click and start getting the patterns that we used to see. You know, having had a bit more time to digest it now and their game plan, how did you feel about the general performance of City? You know, notwithstanding an incredible goal by Bernardo Silva, but what did you make of it overall, especially in that first half to start?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit, I don't know exactly what the word I'm looking for here is, but it's sort of a bit muted in a way, because you could see the fatigue in the players. I mean, they've been open and honest about how fatigued they've been this past week, and it really was reflected in that performance. And I think one example of it is, for the first time more or less all season, we saw Foden and De Bruyne start as the two interiors together. We've been looking for that, waiting for that. And this was the first time where it really was implemented from the off, with true wingers either side of them. And yet, at the same time, we never really got a full glimpse at that because of just how sort of subdued the performance was. So it was a bit disappointing for me on that front because, you know, I see how they line up in the first 5-10 minutes. I'm thinking, right, we're going to get some magic here. And Phil Foden ended up having 59 touches on the night, which is, relatively speaking, pretty damn low. So it has me mixed because on one hand, I like how Pep set up. I like the selection on paper, you know, context taken out of it. I like the setup. I like the ideas behind it. And yet, at the same time, the performance didn't really come through from there. So I'm left thinking a bit and really sort of left not making too many conclusions from this because I think it can be a bit difficult to read sort of in between the lines when you do have the fatigue played into it. And then we also had, you know, along with that sort of tactical tweak up front, we had Akanji stepping into midfield over Stones. My assumption with that, and I want to turn it to Bailey here and hear your thoughts on this specifically, but for me, I think some people have been making a bit of noise about whether Akanji is sort of potentially even better than Stones in that role at this point. And yes, he's adapted well, but for me, I read that as, okay, Stones is more injury prone. He is probably feeling it because he wasn't fully fit midweek. Start him as the sort of anchor, let Akanji get in, do the dirty work, do the physical work. And for me, that's the reason that I read that Akanji was the one stepping up instead of Stones.
Yeah, I think if you're looking at just comparing the two, then Stones is obviously much more intelligent with his movement on the ball in that position, whereas Akanji, like Alex said, is more reliable on his fitness. And then he's got a lot more athleticism than Stones, so he's going to be quicker and cover a lot more ground across that final third. But I think between this game and the last game, you're seeing both sides of it with Akanji because he's made some really good 1-2s in different places. He's made some really good runs. But then he's also been caught quite a few times around the box where he's not making the decision somebody that is a midfielder would make in those positions. I think going back to Stones, this was what he came on for like the last 10, 15 minutes of the game. So even doing 90 minutes today was going to in the FA Cup game was going to be a bit of a stretch, wasn't it? And then the other point I'd say with the way they were kind of changing it was just to try and make it more difficult for Chelsea to stop City progressing the ball through that midfield. You saw both Akanji and Stone stepping in, both going at different levels, so you had a bit more of an option between the lines. So yeah, I think it was more just about giving City different options in that build-up.
Yeah, I'm going to come back at you straight away, Bailey, because I want to talk about Jeremy Doku a little bit as well. You know, and we'll move on to talking a little bit more about the second half. You know, this is two games in a row where I think he's been used perfectly. You know, Jack Grealish, I say it pretty much after every review I do on this podcast, you know, whoever I'm with, I think Jack Grealish is a standout and just the way he performs is exceptional. But this kind of method of seeing him play 65, 70 minutes and then Doku comes on and just goes at his fullback and is a bit more aggressive because they can afford to be. And in both games, they were chasing a goal, you know, and arguably he turned it around in both games against Real Madrid in the 90 minutes and then here at Wembley for the FA Cup semi-final. So, Bailey, what have you made of Jeremy Doku, especially more recently? Because obviously he's coming for a lot of criticism this season, a lot of praise as well. But he's coming for criticism more recently, but he seems to have turned a corner almost and is starting to see, you know, we're starting to see a bit of a return for that 55 million that we paid in the summer.
Yes, absolutely he has. And I think in the previous two games, that, 20, 30 minutes he's come on for both of them, you've seen a maturity in his decision-making where he's just knowing when's the right time, when's not the right time. You've seen him be doubled up and then work out, even though I'm doubled up, I've still got the opportunity to get around this guy. When I need to pass it back, when to recycle. And then the other side of that is just the variety. Definitely against Carvajal, although he didn't get through as much, he was trying to shoot through him. He was trying to pass balls into the box. He was getting round him. And he was doing a lot more to his game. Whereas if you go back quite a few games, you would kind of see Doku come on and think, right, this is what he's trying to do in this game. We go to another game and you go, right, okay, he's trying to do just that in this game. Whereas, yeah, these recent two games, you've seen a lot more kind of options to him. And I think then if you kind of expand that to next season, you don't want to get ahead of yourselves and start thinking he's going to be starting number one left winger or starting number one on the right. But I do think it's much more realistic to think he should be hitting above 2,500 minutes and he should be looking for 20 GNA across the whole season in all competitions.
Yeah, definitely. I think we do need to see. We've all got this rule with Pep Guardiola, especially with attackers. You know, it takes a year. Pretty much every attacker he's ever had, it's taken a year for them to get fully used to this system. And I think it's going to be the same with Doku, because we can see there's a lot of potential there with him. But speaking of a player in their second year in the attack, Alex, Julian Alvarez, you know, he's not had as many opportunities in the number nine position that I imagine he would have wanted, but that's natural when your competition is the best striker in the world. But what have you made of what? Are you reading anything into his performance in this game so much? You know, it's been a while since he scored a goal. He's struggling for minutes a little bit, especially with Kevin De Bruyne being back. He's not getting those chances in midfield that we saw earlier in the season. What are you making of? Can you read anything from Julian Alvarez's performance in recent games, or to talk about his season as a whole almost? Because, you know, you can see him doing good things. You see him trying, but you were not seeing the kind of productivity that we have before from him, I don't think.
Yeah, I think similar to my outlook on the performance at large, I don't want to take too much away from this in particular, because again, I think there are factors at play here that sort of muddy the waters a bit. But one thing that I do want to say regarding Julian Alvarez is the fact that he has had to play in midfield so much this season. Of course, there were downsides to that in terms of the direct knock-on effects, but in terms of his development as an individual, you just have to understand that that is going to make him such a better all-around player and a much better all-around threat moving forward. And I think right now in recent weeks, and you know, he's been rotated out pretty much for the first time all season, and so there has been some inconsistency there, and as a player I'm sure that's incredibly difficult to deal with. But I do want to say that he's been sort of stuck in between roles in a sense, where, you know, some weeks he'll be playing in midfield, other weeks he'll be playing as the nine. And as a player, the tendencies from either of those roles sort of tend to stick with you. It's hard to flip that switch in your mind and really think, okay, this game I'm playing as the nine, I need to have all my nine tendencies in a row. He's still going to have some of those midfield tendencies come out when he's playing as a nine and vice versa. And I think that's a good thing, generally speaking, but in the short term, that definitely can lead to some slight sort of like instability in a way. But no, I do think that, you know, he's sort of in the same place that he has been. He's just slowly improving as a player, and he has a really, really strong role to play in terms of a support player on this team. And I do want to take it back one second and just get in my little spiel about Jeremy Doku here, because I was really happy how you introduced that, Ollie, because I completely agree that he was used perfectly in the past few games. And I think there are going to be many City fans who are out there who are watching that, and they take away the conclusion, okay, Jeremy Doku was the best player on the pitch coming on as a sub two games in a row and in two huge knockout games. Why shouldn't he be starting every game? The reason is, the only reason he was, or not the only reason, but one of the main reasons he was the best player on the pitch in both of those, if you so want to describe it as that, is that he did come in as a sub. And if you look at the time that he came in as a sub against Chelsea to the end of the game, he had more touches than anyone else on the pitch. If you look at the overall team and think about, okay, this is a team with not only Jeremy Doku, but Kevin De Bruyne and Phil Foden as well. If you're starting him every game and you keep the same sort of patterns where you just feed him the ball and you run the play through him, you take so much away from those other two. And we know that as good as Jeremy Doku is, he is not Kevin De Bruyne, he's not Phil Foden. And for me, that's still the reason why, yes, this is the perfect way to utilize him in the short term, especially when both of those two are starting. Jeremy Doku off the bench gives you such a complete dynamic change where, as much as we may not enjoy it, it's a really, really pragmatic approach to take where, okay, maybe minutes 0 through 60, you just sort of keep it tight. And especially in a game where your players are fatigued, just make sure that you don't go down too early. And then you have Jeremy Doku coming on 60th minute, 65th minute, whatever it may be. You just know what you're going to get from him, and you know that you're going to get some clear-cut chances off of that. So I just want people to sort of subdue their expectations a little bit, potentially, if you're in the crowd of saying, wait, Jeremy Doku is the best player in both those games. Why shouldn't he be starting every game now?
Yeah, absolutely that. I mean, I put a tweet out, I can't remember during which game it was, but it's saying if Doku can extend these performances that he's putting in after 65, 70 minutes over 90, then great. But we've seen him start 90 minutes and, you know, just kind of drift out the game almost. And that'll come with time, you know. It's a hard system to learn, Pep Guardiola, especially at a club with so much expectation. It must be a little bit overwhelming for new players. Especially when your competition are, you know, especially now, treble winning competition in your squad. He's performed valiantly, but we need to see more from him still. And that's not a bad thing at all. But that will do for part one of this episode. Come back for part two in a moment.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. Don't forget to give us a like and follow. And if you're a fan of what we do, a rating and review would be lovely too. Continuing on with the same theme, one more thing I want to add from the City side of this game, especially. Kevin De Bruyne was given man of the match. Now, I love Kevin De Bruyne, but that to me feels a bit like just a pick on reputation, doesn't it, Alex?
Yeah, I think so. At the same time, it is hard to pick a standout. I think that's the tricky thing is I don't necessarily know who I would have picked as my man of the match. It probably would have been Cole Palmer if we're looking across, you know, all 22 players. In all honesty, I think he was probably the best performer on the pitch. But yeah, I think there are times and moments where that happens where it's just, you know, Kevin De Bruyne was probably the most involved in attack. He ends up, you know, playing a big part in terms of the goal, and yeah, just slap it and give it to him.
I mean, for me, you know, I'm obviously going to be biased, and I'm not even going to give Cole Palmer that credit that he probably deserves, as you say. For me, it would have been Stefan Ortega, because I just think the way he's performed in big moments, he was huge in that game, and we're going to come on to Chelsea, especially in a moment. But Bailey, do you want to offer up an opinion for man of the match in this game for City, or has it already been said?
I think I'm in line with you two, and then I'd probably chuck Doku in there just because we're talking about 20 minutes of a match where somebody's made the difference. The City attacks that we're getting through were coming through Doku's side. Ortega, like you mentioned, made several important saves in the first half that just made sure, although City were losing the ball, they just stayed in the match. And then Palmer, as Alex pointed out, Chelsea didn't put away their chances, but it all came through Cole Palmer. And he did have one brilliant one where he stepped around Rodri and made him look like a cone, didn't he? So that's definitely one in there. But apart from that, everyone's had, you know, maybe 10, 20 minutes where you could remember from the match, okay, that person stood out. And maybe De Bruyne is not going to be a deep line playmaker anymore. He's just going to be a battering ram up front, just run into people.
I mean, for me, as long as Kevin De Bruyne is on the pitch, it's going to be a fun time, no matter what role he's playing. But speaking of a multifaceted Manchester City midfielder, I think we do have to pay a little bit of a tribute to Bernardo Silva. Almost became a bit of an enemy for City fans after that horrific penalty on Wednesday night. But to turn up at Wembley, you know, and we'll come on some of his post-match comments a little bit later as well. But just how brilliant is it to have a guy who's so willing to just consistently go again and go again? You know, okay, Bernardo, go and play on the right wing, you know, does it perfectly. Okay, Bernardo, go and play 120 minutes against Real Madrid, puts in nearly 16 kilometres. and then, you know, scores a huge goal at Wembley almost a year on from, you know, a massive game against Real Madrid where he scored two to take us to the Champions League final. I'm just going to give you a moment here, Bailey, just to wax lyrical about Bernardo Silva. And Alex, you'll get the same opportunity in a second as well, but we'll start with Bailey.
Well, if I just take the goal, then I'd say it's quite amazing to watch back and just see how he watches Cucurella charge in and Bernardo just steps back gracefully, stays in that space and then hangs around to tap it home. And then if you go to the interview after the game where he's talking about feeling his hamstring, feeling his calf, about not sleeping the first night, struggling the next night, maybe getting a decent amount of sleep the night after that, and then to be able to put it right with that goal, I think he'll sleep well. And Pep made the right decision to come out and defend him because he's definitely delivered for City fans at Wembley.
Alex, straight over to you. I mean, there's so many things we can say about Bernardo Silva, but I'm just going to give you a moment here just to say whatever you like, because, you know, we could be seeing the last few of him here. And obviously, if that happens, we'll talk about it on this podcast. I'm sure all, you know, 10, 11 of us will get a chance to. But here's your moment. It's just wax lyrical about Bernardo Silva after what is a pretty amazing moment for him and his career.
Exactly. Yeah. We always say big game Kev, but what about big game Bernardo? I think he's the player that's always there. And exactly as you said, we have to, you know, we have probably single-digit games left with him, I believe. I think, what is it, 7 or 8 probably between now and, might even be less than that between now and the end of the season. We're not going to get many more chances to watch Bernardo Silva in a City shirt in all likelihood. And he has been the player that, you know, this season he has been a bit underperforming relative to expectation when you talk about Bernardo Silva, and yet he is still there in these moments, and yet he is still so reliable. And I think that is just a testament to the player that he is, exactly like you were just saying there, Ollie. And like Pep Guardiola said in the Treble documentary, he was like, I want them, my warriors, and Bernardo Silva is definitely one of his warriors.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And now we'll move on to Chelsea, because I think it's worth noting their performance, because they were in this game the whole way along. It wasn't like it was just City, you know, sitting on the edge of their box and, you know, just taking shot after shot after shot. They really were in this game, Chelsea. It was pretty end to end at times, and it felt like they were getting some of the better chances. You know, 5 shots on target to City's 3, and some absolute sitters from Nicholas Jackson, especially. Chelsea noted for one big chance missed. It kind of looked a bit like alchemy and witchcraft with some of the chances they spurned at times. Sam Lee, the Athletic City reporter, said that you can tell Chelsea were determined to sign Raheem Sterling, as they now have 3 of him in him, Nonny Madueke and Nicholas Jackson, which, you know, made me laugh a little bit. But considering their dire season again, Alex, and their loss to Liverpool in the League Cup final, this game did feel a bit of a must-win to salvage their season and probably maybe even salvage Pochettino's managerial career at Chelsea. Another day, they surely aren't as unlucky in front of goal. But with the goal-scoring prowess we've seen in recent weeks from them, from a name City know well, what did you make of their performance? Because it just looked insane at times with some of the chances they were missing.
Yeah, it did. I think dysfunctional is really the only way that I can generally describe them at the moment. I think, you know, we know that they have quite a lot of immaturity within that side at the moment, whether it is stemming from the transfer situation and how they've handled that, whether it's stemming from Pochettino's management, whether it's just from the personalities that are there. They're not in a great spot. And yet at the same time, you know, again, you look across the results that we've had against them this season, they still have a lot of quality there. And when they put it together in the right way, you can see the potential within this side. And I think this performance in particular was almost, in some ways, an epitome of their entire season, in the sense that, okay, overall, as a system, it's pretty dysfunctional. Individually speaking, you have some brilliant moments. And then when it comes to put the final touches on everything, you don't really have that. So it really is just sort of typical Chelsea at the moment. And, you know, Pep talked about in his post-game presser about, you know, I can't remember actually if this was before or after this result, but regardless, the point stands that in our Champions League final last season, you know, it was a goal line clearance almost from a shot by Lukaku that led us to get that victory. And there are moments in these games, in knockout ties especially, where you need to get lucky. And last week against Real Madrid, we were unlucky in many regards. And in the same token, in this performance, Chelsea could say they were unlucky. And that's really just how football goes. And especially in these big games, you have to take those moments. And when you're playing against City, you know that you're going to be the team that's playing with space on the counter. You know that you're going to have some form of those opportunities. And they prepared pretty well for them. But in the end, it really comes down to, you know, whether you can have those moments of magic and whether they can come through. And in this case for Chelsea, it was, again, just a sort of repeat of the issues they've had all season.
Mm-hmm. Bailey, I know it's a narrative that's been, you know, done to death all season among City content, but what's your take on Cole Palmer, especially? You know, we've seen him perform so well against City this season, and, you know, a great performance on Saturday, even if he was on the losing side. Do you think he'd be thriving in a similar fashion at City? Because this would probably be a game he would have played in if he was still wearing a sky blue shirt, at least. And obviously, your take on the performance as well.
I think there's a few different ways you can kind of slice this, but if we went back to the summer when he went and got to see him go, wish him all the best, knew he was very talented, but didn't expect him to have this impact right away. I think if you look at him at Chelsea, you've got a much more freer role, a role that a lot of people would wish Phil Foden had, and you'd wonder how well he would do in that kind of position. So I think that's definitely a benefit for him, is having that, and then having that dysfunctional team. But the other side is you can only kind of give credit to him for having the confidence, the kind of arrogance at time to take the game by the scruff of the neck amongst the Chelsea side that have to squabble over penalties and squabble over who gets the minutes rather than thinking about the team and how they work together. You know, if you move Cole Palmer's situation with the penalties over to City, nobody's disputing the penalties. Everybody wants the team to win that game. So he's in a completely different environment, but I think we'd be silly to try and put him down. Like, you've just got to give him credit for this season.
I completely agree there myself. And we're going to move quickly on to one of the kind of interesting talking points. After the game, we got an absolute all-timer moment from Pep Guardiola as he went on the BBC after the match and proceeded to not answer a single question about his squad and the performance, and instead talked pretty much exclusively about the pretty awful scheduling situation that this game was contained in. Left City with 2 days to prepare, especially for the fact there was no logical reason for this game to have not been the Sunday game instead of the Saturday. Guardiola called it unacceptable, made clear he had no idea how his players got through the 90 minutes against Chelsea. And making it clear how proud he was of his team, but also his very clear anger at the injury risk that the authorities and broadcasters have put his players in. So, Alex, you know, obviously you won't get the BBC feed over there in America, but what did you, I'm sure you've seen the comments on Twitter and such like, what did you make of them? You know, I don't want to spend too long on this, but at the same time, I think it's quite important to recognize some of the things he was pointing out.
It is, yeah. It's a really tricky one because it feels like a situation where, you know, okay, we sit here on the pod and we talk about the team, we talk about the tactics and the results and the performances, and we don't have any say over any of that, of course, and yet we still like to put in our opinions. But with the scheduling, this is one that feels really sort of hopeless to, you know, put any energy into, because it's like we know it's not going to change. In order for it to change, there would need to be some significant action taken on a part of the clubs individually to, in some form or another, boycott the scheduling. And I know we're losing the FA Cup replays next season, so that will in some way, you know, help out a little bit, but that's just sort of a drop in an ocean almost, in a way. And the way that football is trending, it's not even just about City. It is about club football at large, and the fact that there are going to be players who are run into the ground who in decades past would have careers that go until their mid-30s, go until their early 30s, and they will have years taken off of their careers because football has become this, you know, of course, money-driven, economic-driven sport that just requires more and more and more, and there is a breaking point at some point, and we have not yet reached that full breaking point. And there's an argument made that it will never come because the clubs at the top have so many resources that they're able to cope with these issues. But at the same time, there are massive repercussions for this. And for me personally, I do not like to see the way that football is trending in this regard, because as much as we get more entertainment out of it, these are people at the end of the day. And as much as they are the ones who are making the money, you have to think about their well-being, and you have to think about how this impacts them in terms of them going about their jobs that pretty much support everything that we do revolving around this game. And so for me, it's a massive issue. And on one hand, it feels really, really sort of demotivating to even bring up and talk about, because we know it's not going to change anytime soon, especially at least from where we stand and from our actions. But at the same time, as you say, Ollie, it is something that we need to continue to talk about, because you have to just keep bringing awareness to it, even if the issue is not going to be fixed.
Absolutely. And Bailey, you mentioned earlier about Bernardo's post-match comments, you know, feeling soreness, having to play through what seemed like a bit of an injury. And Pep, comments emerged from him on Sunday morning about what he said to the players at this game, you know, not to fight their feelings. Don't pretend to be happy all the time. If you're sad, you're sad. And that's okay. And especially after a horrific, you know, Champions League exit, even now we've won one, it must be quite a soothing thing to hear from your manager. How do you see this sort of mentality stacking up for the rest of the season? You know, we're not playing until Thursday, so they've actually got a chance to have a little bit of a break. But the schedule is still jam-packed right through for the next month until the end of the season. And there's, you know, no so long London yet either. Four away games, trips to Spurs, a trip to Fulham, West Ham on the final day, then back to Wembley for the FA Cup final. What do you make of the squad coming into this final hit of the season?
I think it's a very, very good sign was the performance at the weekend, wasn't it? I think the selection, we worried, was they going to go really strong? Were they not? And I bet a big part of that was these players, De Bruyne, Rodri and so on, wanted to put it right, wanted to put in a good performance. And he said afterwards about Kyle Walker, did Kyle Walker play well? No, not at all. But he turned up, he played the full game, and he was there. And that is something you can carry across to all the players on the pitch. Was Bernardo Silva at his best? No, but he was there at the right moment. Same thing with Rodri. Was he at his best? No, but he was there on the pitch and he did the minutes. And I think that will then carry forward into these players for the next 5 days break going up to the Brighton game, knowing that they've kind of put that Madrid result to one side. They've gotten over it and now they can get focused on, I think it's 7 games ahead now. Focus on that task at hand. Don't worry about games in hand and all that, and just worry about the next game that comes in front of them.
Absolutely, absolutely. As I say, it would be a miss of us not to talk about our opponents in the FA Cup final, Manchester United, after they scraped through with a game that surely wasn't in the manuscript. How did it end? Penalties win against Championship Coventry City after being 3-0 up. You know, there's going to be a full episode on this week to discuss another Manchester Derby Cup final, which I'm sure no one could have predicted at the start of this season. But we'll get your two thoughts very, very quickly. What do you make of it? Manchester Derby Cup final again. Obviously, you know, done the league double over than this season. We all remember Gundogan's 13-second magic last season. Alex, we'll start with you very quickly. What do you make of what could be a pretty titanic game? You know, a potential double on the line for Manchester City and a bit of pride at stake for Manchester United.
Yeah, I'm excited to run it back, in all honesty. I think you don't get many opportunities like this that sort of line up in as storybook of a way as this has the past two seasons. So it's always nice to have a massive opportunity for that. And on a personal note, the FA Cup final last season was, I think, the one of the only games over the past two seasons that I've missed out on live. So I'm very, very excited to be able to sit down myself for this one and actually watch it with my own two eyes.
Bailey, pretty much the same question. What do you make of it? Are you excited, or are you more kind of sitting nervous? You know, last team you would want to play in a game of this magnitude.
Excited. I think the build up will be pretty horrible, just that long wait all the way through to the match. But excited. Pep said the players love that match. They love the opportunity to be able to win that game. I think it will carry through exactly the same this time around. And perhaps it will be a good opportunity for City Report to get another intro music.
Well, that would be marvellous, wouldn't it? But, you know, I think we're all guilty of sin for laughing at Manchester United, especially this season. I was laughing the whole way through that Coventry comeback. It's just marvellous to see them collapse. Even if they do win it in the end, it's still just fantastic to see them really have to struggle for it. And to be honest, you know, not knowing there's not a treble on the line this time, it's a little bit less pressure. And, you know, as they were joking about last year, no one remembers the second man on the moon. Well, no one's going to remember who wins the second Manchester Cup, Manchester Derby Cup final. It was Manchester City who won the first one. And I really, really hope we get the opportunity to put in a similar sort of pain on their season. Get your bucket hats out, lads. Get them back off eBay. And we'll have another go at Wembley. But that's all for today's episode. Thank you, Alex, for coming on this one.
Yep. Thanks so much. A pleasure as always.
And Bailey as well, thank you.
Thank you very much for having me on.
And thank you for listening. This is City Report Podcast. We'll see you again tomorrow.
Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season running with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial running. And just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.